Hello there, we're in the Word House, House of the Rocky Nugu. Understand that God does His things through His Word, and nothing beyond it. It's our privilege, therefore, to minister God's Word to you. And we believe that as you listen and live by these principles you're about to hear, your life will definitely be transformed. Listen and be blessed.
In House on the Rock, the Word House, on this man-to-man conference, would you receive kindly, all the way from Dubai, John Obidi. Put your hands together as he comes. I will not accept that reception. I still will not accept that reception.
Thank you. Let's be seated, please. This is my second time here. And it feels good to be here. Please give a round of applause to the choir. I enjoyed that song. Before I start, I would like to say a very big thank you to the father of the house, Reverend Ed. Please give him a round of applause. Reverend Ed, I know I've thanked you multiple times in private, but I want to do it in public, right? Somebody once said, private victories precede public victories. And I know that public appreciation hits harder than private thank yous. I want to say in front of the house today, thank you for your mentorship, for your advice, for your friendship. You know, Reverend Ed, wherever I travel in the world, he's somebody I always have on speed dial. And whenever I call him, he answers. Every single piece of advice he has given me, I have done, except one. Why are you laughing? What was that supposed to mean? Why is your own laughter? Why is your own loud? What's the one thing I have not done? You say what? I should go and marry. Okay, man of God, I'm working on that, amen? Round of applause for him, please. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you. Okay, I have less than an hour, and I like to tell stories when I talk. This is a wonderful event. When I heard it was man-to-man, I was really excited because we need to have these conversations, especially for men. But it's a good thing that the women are also welcome. Hello, women. Hello, ladies. So good to see you. All right? All right. Hello, men. Hello, guys. I have to speak with gusto to the men. All right. So let's keep on going. Please, guys, put up the Bible verse that talks about time and chance happening to them all. I put it up there while I get into my storytelling. Time and chance, all right? We're talking about money, but every conversation with me is a lesson in critical thinking. Say it after me, a lesson in critical thinking, all right? And why do I place a premium on thinking? Why? Do you know that the human being, we are one of the weakest animals in the animal kingdom? Oh, you thought we're the most dominant, yeah? Do you know that if they were to take a human being right now, put you in the jungle, there is nothing in your anatomy that can save you from a tiger? You know that? Yeah, because you cannot run. Like an antelope. An antelope has four legs that can run away. We have only two. Yeah? Our skin is so tender. One little scratch, blood is everywhere. I was watching a nature documentary where there was a pride of lions in the savannah or the safari. And they were lying out there, kings of the jungle, so they say. And a pack of hippos were coming on that same path. The lions scattered and gave way. It makes no sense. Their skin is so tough, right? Or a rhinoceros. You don't even call it skin. You call it hide, H-I-D-E. Hide is that tough. It can't get through. So even the lion respects the rhino, respects the elephant. But a human being, we don't have a tough skin. We can't even fly away like the bird. As tiny as a bird is, when it sees danger, it can take flight. We cannot fly. You can't even jump into the water like a fish and swim away. You're just standing. We don't have tough teeth, fangs to even bite back and win. We have little teeth that, you know, you go to the dentist, scaling and polishing, yeah? We don't have talons or claws to deal a deathly blow. We don't have that. We have lovely manicured nails. They would break with any little pressure. So what makes us the dominant species? We're the weakest. But there is one thing that makes us dominant. And what is that? And that is why we are called Homo sapiens. You know what Homo sapiens means? Homo means human. Sapiens means wise. Wise humans. Because one thing the human being has is that we may not be as strong as the lion, but we can step back and observe its movements. And we can plan around its patterns. And we can say, I may not be as strong as this lion, but I observe that every time it wakes up, it goes this way. I observe that every time it goes this way, we can set a trap here. We can set a trap here. And so that is why we say, my people perish for a lack of what? It is your thinking ability. The first thing your parents should have taught you once you were born to this world is on how to use your mind, all right? So every conversation here is a lesson on thinking, all right? That said, let me start with my first story. Now, some years ago, sometime in, I think, 2011, years ago, I was a much younger man, a younger boy. A friend of mine lost his dad, right? And we, as his friends, were accompanying him to the funeral somewhere in Yenagoa. I was based in Benin City, Nigeria then. I had not left Nigeria. I was in Benin. And so we went with him. We went by road, and we got to Bayelsa State, Yenagoa. Now, one of the first things I noticed on getting to Yenagoa was the hot sun. And I'll tell you why I'm highlighting the sun, yeah? It'll come to play in the story. The sun was so hot, and I noted, that's interesting. It's my first time down in the deep south, and I thought that because it's close to the water, it will be cooler. But it's really hot, so it made an impression in my mind. But we kept on going. It was so hot that the sand on the ground was almost burning through our shoes. That's how hot the sun was burning that day. Anyway, we kept on going. We parked and we kept on walking. We got to the funeral area. There was an occasion. And as we approached, I saw some men over in the distance. And I asked my friend, what are those men doing? They seem to be doing something interesting there. And he said, those men are rainmakers. I said, rainmakers? What is their purpose here? And he said, it is their job to make sure that rain doesn't fall and disrupt the occasion. Also, if you do not pay them, they can make rain fall to disrupt the occasion. Now, I was a much younger man and well-educated, a man of science, and in my mind, I scoffed. I didn't scoff audibly to his hearing because I didn't want to disrespect what was happening. But in my head, I'm like, right, they're going to scam you guys. That's what I was thinking. And I forgot about it. We went to the occasion. It was successful. Ladies and gentlemen, not more than 5 minutes after everything was concluded, I told you that the sun was very hot, yeah? Not a single cloud in the sky. But the clouds now began to gather. And there was a heavy downpour. I had read about it. I had never seen it in my life. If you had told me that rainmakers were real, I wouldn't have believed. I was like, no, that's superstition. It's not real. I saw this thing and I was just dumbfounded. I was quiet. And the villagers, when the rain started pouring, they were jubilating and they were clapping and they were dancing. I was the only one in a sober mood. I said, you know what? I refuse to believe that this thing is spiritual. It's not. I don't know what it is, but it's not spiritual. There's a science here, and I will not rest until I figure out the science. It was 2011. On the ride back home, back to Benin, I was lost in thought. What happened there? That's me. I'm a scientist. I have to know. I can't rest. What does the Bible say? It says, it's the glory of God to do what? To conceal a thing. It is the honor of kings to what? It's my identity. I cannot rest until I know. I have to know. It's what makes me. I'm not trying to know. It's just who I am. I cannot sleep until I know. Yeah? And so I got home. I searched. I researched. I asked questions. I couldn't figure it out. I was so sad. But I left it. What could I do? Many years passed. In 2020, I relocated to Dubai. All right? You'll see how the story comes full circle. Now, Dubai is an interesting place. It is located in the desert. Rain does not fall there, ever. I mean, there are exceptions, but usually it doesn't fall. So you might notice that Dubai has poor drainage systems because they didn't build the city with the expectation of rain. You may have seen on social media when it was terribly flooded, yeah? Yeah, that's because it has, the rain is not, wasn't that crazy. It's just that they have poor drainage because they don't expect rain. That's where it is. But one day, I think in my third month after I had moved in and settled in, there was an announcement on the television, radio, and social media by the Dubai government through their Department of Meteorology. And they said, hey, everyone, on this particular date, between the hours of this and this, we are going to be conducting an operation called cloud seeding. Cloud seeding is a scientific procedure whereby we are able to artificially make rain fall. Because sometimes it gets really hot, and to cool things down, they have a way of making rain artificially. Bro, that was my first time of hearing of cloud seeding. And they said, if you want to have more information, here's a link, click here, and read more about how this happens. I said, okay, and I clicked. And they explained, we're going to fly specialized jets through the clouds and shoot out salt flares. Salt, yeah? We're going to shoot out salt into the clouds, and this salt is going to interact and cause a reaction with the clouds and bring about a downpour of rain. So we're just telling you guys so you can adjust your movements accordingly on this day so you don't get stranded. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. Let's see how it works. And on that appointed day, I watched, just like in Yenagoa. The sun was blazing hot. If you've ever been to the Middle East, I don't know where their sun was manufactured. Oh my goodness, it is terribly hot. And before we knew it, the clouds began to gather, and there was a heavy downpour. You know what I shouted? Yenagoa. I said it. Years had passed. I said, Yenagoa, this is what they, I don't know how, this is, I now tried to think back to what I saw those many years ago. I said, what did I really see? Because back then, I was still so young, I didn't really pay attention. I just saw what they were doing, and I scoffed and walked away. So I didn't really pay attention. So I tried, years had passed, the memory had faded. I was trying to recall, what did I really see? And I remember that those men were gathered around like a circle, and there was a fire somewhere, and they were burning some things that were going up into the clouds. And I said, that is how they did it. They couldn't do it on the level of jets, but they figured out a way to use whatever they had to push those things up into the atmosphere and cause rain. It was simple science. So I have a mailing list, a newsletter that I send out to hundreds of thousands of people every week. And I went to my computer and I typed out an email and I titled that newsletter, The Rainmakers of Yenagoa. And I emailed that out as my discovery. And look what happened. But my takeaway was that in this world, you are going to have rainmakers and villagers. And who are the villagers? The villagers celebrate the effect of a thing. They dance. You see rain falling, you are dancing, you are clapping, you are celebrating. The rainmakers study the cause. They unlock the principle behind the cause with a view to replicating that cause whenever they wish. The second thing the rainmakers do is that they keep it secret. When Mark Zuckerberg tells you on Facebook, what are you thinking? You respond, none of your business. There are some of you, the idea that would change your life. You went to bed one night, and God came to you in the dead of night. Huh? After you finished praying, receiving anointing from Reverend Ed, receiving prayers from Reverend Ed, receiving unction to function from Reverend Ed. And everything worked. You went to bed. You went to sleep. And God decided to favor you that day. And he came to you in the dead of night, the way he came to Solomon, and gave Solomon wisdom. And he came to you and gave you that idea that would change your life forever. When you woke up, what did you do? Instagram Live. Hello, everyone. I don't know who this is for, but it's just for you. Not them. Who raised you? Poor man Pekin, it's so easy to know them. What are you doing? Social media? No, that must have a spirit. It's got to. It could have changed your life. What did Solomon say? He said what? A slothful man roasts not that which he took in hunting. But the substance of the diligent man is what? Precious. Slothful man. The idea just came. You sold your birthright for likes and comments. Hello, everyone. So I was just in the middle of the night. I just had this idea. And I don't know what it's for. I don't know. So somebody here, right? This idea on how to make millions. Step one. Oh, my goodness. Your unborn children are watching like, oh, my God, there goes our inheritance. Oh, God, mommy couldn't keep her mouth shut. Oh, my goodness. And you see, the child of the wealthy man is watching that live. He's watching that video. He will not click like. He will not comment. He will not register his presence there. He's watching. Interesting. Okay, keep talking. He will give his PA to go and research it. Is this thing really correct? It's correct? Let's do it. What do they know? Patents, trademarks, copyrights. What do you know? Idea. The slothful man, the lazy man, roasts not that which he took in hunting. You want to sell raw meat and you want to get paid money. You get peanuts if you get paid at all. But the substance of the diligent man, he roasts it, he seasons it, he packages it, he patents it, he keeps the trade secret secret, like the rainmakers of Yenagoa. So I want to ask you guys today, who are you? Are you a rainmaker or a villager? Who are you? Tell yourself, say, I am a rainmaker. I am a rainmaker. You see, it's fun being a rainmaker. Everybody celebrates us. And they attribute all kinds of things to our success. They say, maybe some will say grace, some will say luck, some will say because you are a fine boy. Praise God, I am. Yes. Thank God. But one of the things that rainmakers do, we study. We are the type of people that will not rest until we know. Do you know how many hours? See, the most powerful countries in the world, there is one department they spend a lot of time, money, and personnel on. What is that? R&D, research and development. Some of you make the confession and say, I am a holy nation, all right? I am a holy nation. And that is correct. You are a nation. But as a nation that you are, how much does this nation spend on research and development? How much do you spend on research? How much do you spend on books? As a child, my father raised me such that if I heard a new word whose meaning I did not know, I was not permitted to go to bed until I researched it. I had to know. And that is who the rainmakers are. And see, the rainmakers, they kept the secret secret, and you pay them every time. They don't give it away for cheap. You cannot know their secret until they initiate you. So who are you, rainmaker or villager? Tell me. Rainmaker. Awesome. All right, let's have that scripture up. This is an interesting verse. It guides me every time. Every time you come to this verse, you see something else. I was so excited when Reverend Ed was using Ecclesiastes up there because Solomon, oh my goodness. One thing I really appreciate about Solomon was that he never wrote anything that says, and God told me, or I saw a vision, or thus saith the Lord, everything Solomon wrote was through his observation, his critical thinking, and he would document them, and he would make deductions. I mean, what's a king doing observing ants? Yes, you sluggard, come. Observe the ant. He says, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the arms to rest, and poverty shall attack you like an armed bandit. Man, he was harsh. All right, let's look at this. It says, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift. That is odd. The race should be to the swift under normal circumstances. What next? Nor the battle to the strong. The battle ought to be to the strongest. What is he saying? I'm going to hurt you just a little bit. Can I? A little bit. Now he says, neither yet bread to the wise. Oh, I thought they said wisdom was the principal thing. All right? It said principal thing, not the only thing. What does principal mean? First. English. First. Okay? But it says, it is possible that you will be wise and not have food to eat. Remember when he himself wrote about the poor wise man? He says there was a man that saved the city with his wisdom, but nobody remembered him because he was poor. And who wrote that story? The rich wise man. Right? Maybe some other time I'll talk about the characteristics of the rich wise man. Yeah? But the poor wise man gets no bread. Let's keep going. Nor yet riches to men of understanding. What is all this? I thought they said we should pray for wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. So you're telling me that with all my understanding, I might still not get rich? What's the next one? Nor yet favor to men of skill. What's going on? I thought they said skill pays the bills. Skills. Get a skill. True. But what is he saying? Nor yet favor to men of skill. But, and here's the key word, but time and chance happeneth to them all. Let us disambiguate time and chance. Time and chance. Do you know why the race is not to the swift? It is because of time and chance. But let's dwell on time. What is time? All right? The passage of time, age. And through time, definitions change. What it meant to be strong in the 50s is not the same thing as what it means to be strong today. What it meant to be swift, fast, is not the same thing as what it means today to be swift. Please keep it up on the screen, even if it's just small there. Thank you. All right? So, to buttress this point, let me take us on a history lesson. And please, men, women, I posted on my Facebook today that it is important that you pass across knowledge of history to your children. One of the things I always talk about who I am today, what I'm doing today, by the grace of God, comes from my father. My father was an excellent student. He made sure I was an excellent student. Before I was 12 years old, I had read the Bible cover to cover multiple times. Before I was 12 years old, I knew the history of Nigeria cover to cover. Before I was 12 years old, I knew all the secretary generals of the United Nations, even from way back when it was called the UNO. I knew all the secretary generals of the Africa Union from way back when it was called the OAU, Organization of African Unity. I knew all our heads of state of Nigeria. I knew everything about the wars that made the world, the civil wars of Nigeria, of the United States, the First World War, Second World War. I knew all the action figures that shaped history. Bob Marley once wrote, he said, when you know where you are coming from, you know where you are going to. So, of course, I would demand that of you, but make it generational. Don't let your children join the masses to not know who is Margaret Thatcher. But they know the reality TV stars and the housemates. No, now, that's a curse. That's terrible. No. I mean that, like, it, those of you who follow me online know that I have a deep hatred for that behavior. Deep, I don't want to just lean into that, but I think I've made my point there. But let's go on a little bit of a history lesson, all right? Now, when you look at the empires that shaped the world, we know of many empires. You know of the Roman Empire. You know of the British Empire. Today we have the American Empire. But let's talk about the British Empire. How did the British Empire become the world power? How? Well, before the British, you had to understand that the Romans had the power, yes? But you see, the Romans built their power at a time when strength, remember, time and chance, we're going to base on this, okay? The Romans built their strength at a time when strength was defined by chariots, horses, swordsmen, archers. But over time, time happened to that technology. The British realized that they were a small, tiny island nation. They had very few numbers. They were vulnerable to attack. And they said, what do we do to protect ourselves? And they looked around and said, well, we have water. What if we can conquer the waters around us so we can form a defensive position first? And once we can do that, we can maybe have enough to even go on the offensive. And that's what they did. But in the year 1889, they signed into law something called the two-power standard. So they didn't just wish, we want to be the world power. Right? They didn't just confess positive, right? They wrote it into law, legislation, and put finance behind it. It was a bill called the two-power standard. What was the two-power standard? It said that the British Navy, at any given point in time, had to have the same amount of naval forces as the two world powers of the time combined. At the time, the world powers were Russia and France. So what the bill said was that when you combine the naval strength of France and the naval strength of Russia, the British Navy was to have more than both of them combined at any point in time. And that was the two-power standard. And so they put money behind it. They got to work. Had all these ships. And with all these ships, they had the strongest navy in the world. And even though they could defend themselves now, they now went on the offensive. And you know what they did with that? They colonized the world, created the British Empire. And that ushered in a whole age of prosperity for the British Empire. But time and chance happened to them all. Before I move on, in your leisure, I want you to research something called the Opium Wars. It was a war being fought between China and the United Kingdom. Or rather, was it the United Kingdom? The British, all right? In that time, the British and China had an open trade agreement that simply said, I buy from you as long as you buy from me. Well, you see, there was always a problem here because the Chinese have had a history of being self-sufficient. They really don't need you, but we need them. So the British would go to China and buy. But the Chinese were not buying anything from the British. And the British were like, hey, we had an agreement. We buy from you and you buy from us. And the Chinese said, you have nothing that we want. Said, okay, hold that thought. We have something that your people will not be able to resist. Really? What is that? And they said, opium. Opium is a drug. Today it's illegal, but back then it was legal. And the British were making a lot of money selling opium. And they told the king of China, he was ruled by a king at that time, and said, hey, this is what we got. Trust me, you throw this in the market, your people are going to buy it. King said, no, I cannot agree to that. It's a drug, it's addictive, I don't want my people taking this crap. And they said, well, if you say no, that's an act of war. Because we had an agreement. You buy from me, I buy from you. You have to take the opium, or that's a declaration of war. The Chinese thought they were joking until the British attacked with their ships, beat the hell out of the Chinese till they surrendered and accepted the opium. How is that funny? They beat the hell out of them. And that's because they could do all that because under normal circumstances, the battle is to the strong. But only at the time when strength was defined by your ships. What is strength defined by today? Nuclear weapons. You get rich China. You can't do that again because the pendulum has swung. And China is now top in the new definition of speed and strength. But let's keep on moving. Let's double back, all right? When the British owned the ships, all right? And they conquered the world. As they were conquering the world, something was happening in faraway America. While they had the fastest ships and dominated trade and commerce and military warfare, the Americans, the Wright brothers, discovered flight in the year 1903. And they made their first flight. And the Wright brothers are not British, they're American. So America was the first to flight. And America saw this and were like, what? We can fly? And they hit the ground running. They put money behind building a fleet of airplanes. But at this time, the British could not keep up. They now had so many ships they could not sell. Before your ship leaves to come to my harbor, my plane would have gone over and dropped bombs all over. So they just left it for the Americans, and the Americans took over. So now the Americans had the power because they were first to that technology. Time had happened to the ships. And then you keep on moving. If you watch movies like Oppenheimer and you study history of World War II, when they had the atomic bomb, right? And remember when the United States took those bombs and dropped on Japan, Hiroshima, right? And Nagasaki, yes. But you see, when these things are happening, other silent actors are watching and observing and learning. And they were watching like, the atomic bomb is pretty dangerous. But how did it get to Japan? Planes, right? Okay, how fast is the plane? Okay. And they developed something more called ICBMs. What are ICBMs? Intercontinental ballistic missiles. Before your plane takes off. You say what? Intercontinental. This missile will pass continents and reach you before your plane even takes off. So now, the only countries that you don't mess with are not even the richest countries. They are countries that have nuclear weapons and ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles. North Korea is a poor country. It's a poor country. But you don't mess with them. Why? The definition of speed and strength is in how fast that ICBM can reach you if you threaten them. I was reading up on Russia, and there's this thing that Russia even has. It's called the dead hand system, right? So Russia and the U.S. have always had this understanding of what we call MAD, Yeah? MAD, mutually assured destruction. So US has weapons, Russia has weapons. But Russia was thinking that, what if the US makes a very calculated strike and takes us out? So they created something called the dead hand system that would sense that the whole, maybe their command and control has been destroyed. When it senses that, it doesn't need any human interference. They will launch every single thing they have. As in, we're already dead, it's okay. We accept. But the systems will automatically launch, not one, two, three, four. Since we're already dead now, it's the end of the country, I'll be end of Russia. So let's just finish everything. So if you Google it, it's called the dead hand system. Just Google dead hand system Russia, and you can read all about it. All right? So that is where the world is playing today. Now, how does this affect finance? Let's bring this home. How does this affect finances? Does anybody remember a generation, those of you who still talk to your parents and grandparents, and those who are still old enough to remember, where communities in Nigeria operated as high trust communities? You know, in the world, we have high trust societies, low trust societies. Yeah, Dubai is a high trust society. Nothing gets missing. You go to a restaurant, you leave your phone there, nothing will happen. They might even bring it to your door and say, sorry, you left this thing behind. All right, you're not panicked. Crime is almost like 0%. Yeah, there are countries like that. Then there are countries that are what we call low trust societies. You hold your bag. Clutch it. There's this thing that happened. I get shy to tell this story. Like when I traveled out of Nigeria for the first time, yeah, in 2015. You know how when you are, you know, meandering through the airports in Nigeria, how all these boys just come, my help you, and you be like, and you're holding your, yeah. That is, I grew up in Nigeria. I'm a Nigerian. You understand? Uh-huh. You have to have a little bit of agbero inside you. Just a little, a pinch. Just have that, be as civilized as you want. But have that little pinch of agbero. Then go back off. Right? So my first ever trip was to Brazil, 2015. I just went for my birthday. And when I landed, someone was trying to help me with my bags. And I took the Nigerian definition of that gesture. And the guy was startled, like, I'm just trying to help. I felt so ashamed. Huh? I don't carry this thing coin here. Anyway, high trust, low trust. So there was once a time when Nigeria was a high trust, all right? Does anybody remember the night markets back in the day? Night markets. For those who are too young to know what the night markets were, I'm too young too, but my parents told me, yeah? Right? So the night markets, when the women that were selling the markets were done for the day, they didn't take away their wares. They left them there. And they would use stones or something to denote how much everything cost. So if you were just a traveler and you were passing by and you wanted something, you could just go pick what you wanted, drop the money that was equivalent, and walk away. No CCTV cameras, no police, no surveillance, but everybody kept it honest. That was the Nigeria before Nigeria. Yeah? But you know why we were able to do that? Because Africa, but let me localize to Nigeria. Nigeria is, I won't say blessed, spoilt. Spoilt with resources. You know when you can't call somebody blessed anymore because it's almost unfair what you have. How many of you have watched any of these like Game of Thrones where they're always saying winter is coming, winter is coming? You've heard that before? You know why they are always panicked in Europe about winter? Because when winter comes, everybody has to lock up. Nobody can work. Nobody can go out. you have to lock up with your family and try to survive on what you made during the summer. And you are hoping for winter to pass so that you don't die of starvation. So you can go out again and continue planting. Come to Nigeria, food is growing all year round. Fruit is spoiling from the trees. I keep wondering how those initial slave masters came and were seen, eh? Everything grows here. You know, cassava is not originally Nigerian. Yeah? It's Brazilian. I didn't know until I went to Brazil and they served me garri with rice. It's a little bit of a, you know, garri that went to Harvard. It was spiced. But you will know this is garri, guy. This is garri. They have a different name, but this is garri. And I learned that it was during the slave trade exchange and all that they brought cassava over to Nigeria. The soil was favorable, and it became our thing. So whether the things that are indigenous to us or not, our soil grows anything. You know, there's some species of apple now that are able to grow in Nigeria. So this place was so blessed and spoiled. So you know, the thing, when you study, you know, biology and science and the theory of evolution, you learn things like the survival of the fittest, right? And you learn that the species only evolve due to stress, right? You will not evolve or improve unless you are stressed to the brink or you are facing an existential threat. So when you are dying of hunger, your inspiration quickens. Your motivation quickens. Somebody was laughing here. Like, hunger has taught you some sense recently, right? You just have some kind of wisdom and you get more witty. We didn't have that kind of scarcity. River, Niger, River. I don't know if you remember primary school. Rivers in Africa, hey. Water everywhere, waterfalls. What's going on? But over there, what grows in the UK? Not much. Not much. Now, you might say not much, therefore, we are more blessed than them. But you see, scarcity has its place. Hunger is a necessary stimulus for higher inventions. There are some inventions you will not conceive unless you are in lack. So when you are in lack, understand how to interpret it correctly. Don't sell your birthright. That hunger is not unto death. That hunger is telling you, listen, you will not die. But in order to survive, you've got to think. Open your eyes. Think. And so to those places that didn't have as much as Nigeria had, they had to be witty. And so you come to Nigeria, because things were abundant, our people didn't need to learn how to be persuasive. You just come to the market. If you don't buy from this one, you will buy from this one. If you don't buy from this one, you... And even if the market woman doesn't sell that much, it's okay. She has a farm that will feed her. You can just go pluck... Yeah, you know, we were just chilling. But over there, when they were facing existential threats, they had to be witty. Unfortunately, some of that wit was plowed into certain directions like slavery. But they had to find a way to survive. And so they had to learn how to be persuasive, how to be cunning. And they sharpened it. Now, another thing happened. When colonization began, the laws, the rules of the modern world were rewritten. Catch this, guys. The rules of the modern world were rewritten, not by the black man, not by the Nigerian man, not by the Igbo man, or the Yoruba man, or the Hausa man. The rules of the modern world were rewritten by the British. And that's okay. That's the way the world has always been. Any empire that took over power of the world were given the right to rewrite the rules. It's been that way all throughout history. If you remember in the time of Jesus, when they were trying to test him, And I said, hey, should we pay taxes to Caesar? And they said, bring me a coin. And he asked them, whose face is on that coin? They said, Caesar. Why was Caesar's face on a coin that the Jews were spending? Because the Roman Empire had conquered the world. So if you were under the area where the Roman Empire had conquered, you had to spend Roman coin, whether you were Roman or not. And so many other things. There were these emblems all over that area called Judea. In that time, it was mostly Judea, that is Israel. This emblem of the eagle, right? And the Jews hated that eagle, that symbol, because it was a pagan symbol. All right, they hated it so bad, but they couldn't do anything about it because the Romans had the power at the time to rewrite the rules of the modern world. And that's the way it has been, right? If you look at the book of Daniel, you see the Babylonians had their time, the Persians had their time, and so on. But now the British came and rewrote the rules of the modern world, the rules of commerce, the rules of legal infrastructure, even politics. What kind of politics do we practice? Democracy. Initially, of the British, you know, we once had a prime minister. Yes. Right? You know, we once used to have right-hand drive, long time ago. You know, we once used to spend as our currency the pound. You know that? Until slowly we began to change. We once had a very different flag until it became green, white, green. So, a lot of, even look at what we are wearing. This is all British. Right? So they rewrote the rules, but this is regarding finance now. They rewrote the rules of trade. And I always ask this question, why is it that at a time when the Lebanese are coming here, the Pakistanis are coming here, the Chinese are coming here, the Indians are coming here, they're all coming here, the Nigerian is running, is escaping? Why is that? A lot of times I don't get a satisfactory answer to that. Why is the Nigerian running? I get it. The Nigerian is running not because the Nigerian is lazy. No. If you look at things that have come and gone, right? Even things that I criticize openly, like, you get it? If you don't get it, forget about it. Tap, 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 tap. Huh? It's foolish. Oh, I will hurt you a little bit. Just a little. Yeah, it's foolish. Very foolish. Don't let them enslave you again. We've paid the price. We've paid the price. It's over. Don't do that. Don't let your kids cry. What the hell is mommy doing? Come on now. You tap in. What you doing, mom? What you doing? What are you doing? Come on now. I thought you said you had a sound mind. I thought you said that. I thought you said that you have an excellent spirit. Did you not? I thought you raised your hands here when Reverend Ed was asking you to pray and make confessions, but you now go home and tap? What you doing? What's that? Come on now. Don't embarrass this house. That's disgraceful. I was on the plane today when I was coming. The lady beside me, lovely old lady, you know, and I saw her tapping. I was like, ugh. I thought people that do this, like, maybe in buses or something, but she's right here. And anyway, as deplorable as that is, there's something positive there, which is that Nigerians are enterprising. Nigerians are naturally ambitious. Just show them the way. They will enter it. Anywhere we go in Africa, they say that about Nigerians. You guys have a different energy. I have never met a Nigerian that doesn't have ambition. Every Nigerian wants to live the Nigerian dream, which is what? To blow. Every. If they have not blown yet, it's a knowledge problem, not an ambition problem. Most of the time. All right? Most of the time. So why is the Nigerian running? And that is because the Nigerian has not been updated on the new rules of the modern world. And it's not your fault. You didn't write it. And those who wrote it did not update you because they needed you to be servants in the new order. And so one of the things that a lot of us will have to do is to revisit your vocabulary. Nigerians do not understand English. You think you do. You don't. And one of the things you have to do when reinventing yourself, when taking your power back, is to take your mind back to the dictionary and revisit the meaning of words. Life and death are in the power of, aka, life and death are in the power of language. How can you be communicating majorly in a language you do not fully understand? I could spend an hour talking about the power of language. Go back and study about the words that we use, what we call etymology. Etymology is about the root meaning of words, where it came from. The empires that formed the world, the Greeks, the Romans, and some other cultures, contributed root words to the English language that have deeper meanings. But let me focus on finance, okay? Now, when you see the Nigerian has been taught that in order to make money, you have to work. And that's okay. The same thing has been taught to the poor American. We have poor white men too. The same thing has been taught to the poor American, that in order to make money, you have to work. And yes, if you want to make biscuit money, that's a good thing to live by. But what do we say, those of you that know, is the highest paid profession in the world? Shout it. What? 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 Say it, say it. I didn't hear you. Okay. Did anybody say selling? Selling, all right? They say selling is the most highest paying job in the world, okay? Selling, sales. But what does it mean to sell? The Nigerian still uses that word by an inferior definition. The Nigerian thinks that selling means exchanging goods and services for money. You give me something. That's not selling. That is an important aspect of the sales conversation. That is not what selling means. Has anybody seen The Wolf of Wall Street? Okay. When the lead character, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, says, "Sell me this pen," what does he mean? There's no money being exchanged. Think. He's saying, "Convince me of the idea of this pen." You see, when Moses was told by God to go and set the people free, and Moses said, "See, I have a stutter, a speech impediment." Why did God not say, "Okay, I'm all powerful, go and I'll do it"? He said, "This thing will hinder you. Yeah. See your brother? Take him along. He will be your mouthpiece." Because to sell is to convince. And the reason you don't see it as selling is because money is not being exchanged. But you see, I always say there are four currencies of life. M-E-A-T, meat. M-E-A-T. M is the most popular currency, money. We all know money, right? We're in the East. Everybody knows money. Yeah? That's the first currency of life. But the second one is E, energy. That's why when you are used up all your energy, you say, "I am spent." It's currency. You don't know it's currency. That's why you waste it on nonsense. You don't value it. King David said, "A man that is in honor, but knoweth not, is like the beasts that perish." When you have something so precious, but you don't value it, you are easy to kill. You are easy to abuse. You are easy to supplant. You are easy to deceive. Money. Energy. The third one, A, is attention. Ah, you don't know it's a currency. Why do we ask you to pay attention? Did I tell you guys about language? Life and death are in the power of language. You've got to know the meaning of the words you say. You've got to know the meaning of the words that are used on you. They say words are magic. That's why it's called spelling. Words cast spells. That's why it's called spelling. Words cast spells. Know the meaning of the words so that maybe you too can cast spells and have no spells cast on you. When we say there shall be no divination against Israel, go and learn language, because somebody can be casting divination. You'll be saying, yes, sir. Understand the meaning. When we say pay attention, I'm asking you to pay attention, okay? What's the last one? T is what? Time. That's how we say spend time. Spend. Spend. And you don't know it's currency, so you waste time, all right? So in a sales conversation, am I selling right now? Okay. In the process, I'm not getting your money right now, but what else am I getting? Your attention. You are paying attention. I need that attention because someday I'm going to convert it into other forms of currency. You follow me? And some of you are also spending your energy. I need that investment of your energy. It will come in handy someday. You are also spending your time. But in exchange for all these things you are spending, what are you getting in return? Knowledge. So every time you spend your money, your energy, your attention, your time, what are you getting back? When you watch reality TV shows and you spend your attention on that, what do you get back from that exchange? My people perish for lack of knowledge. You know, I can forgive people who spend attention on those things. I don't condone it, but it's forgivable. It's people that spend money that I wonder. Money to vote. And outside of the four currencies of life, I'm also getting other things from you right now. What am I getting from you as I am selling you? I'm selling you on the idea of the fact that I sabi book, right? I'm selling you on ideas that I am competent. I'm selling you on the idea that I am trustworthy to varying degrees of success. I'm selling you on the idea that I've spent years gathering knowledge. I'm selling you on multiple things. And in return, I am getting other things. I'm getting trust. I'm getting attention. I'm getting future patronage. I'm getting all that things. So you have to understand why every human being has to be updated on the new definition of selling. Money doesn't have to be exchanged. When you understand that everything you do is a sales conversation, you will be mindful of how you show up. You think that you get paid for showing up to work? If you're an employee, no, you get paid for how you sell yourself in that moment. If you understand that even when you show up to work, it is selling, you wouldn't slack. From the clothes that you wear, you are selling an idea to your boss. I can't do without this guy. I can't let somebody else take him. I have to increase his salary, send him abroad for training. I have to incentivize him, sweeten the deal somehow. When you show up to work and you sharpen your appearance, train yourself, do more than you are paid for, you are selling an idea. What's the idea you are selling? Me. I am indispensable. You see, they say nobody is replaceable in this world. There are exceptions. I'm irreplaceable. And your boss gets the idea. Even when you are a toasting woman, amen? You are selling her on an idea. Everything you do is a sales conversation. as if the rules of the modern world have been rewritten such that the Nigerian has not learned how to sell. And selling is how you exchange money in a given geography. Now, I know my time is far spent already. Let me quickly round this off, right? In 2018 was the year that Bitcoin, blockchain was all over the place. And I felt so ashamed that with all my Sabi book, I knew nothing about crypto. I knew nothing about, what is this thing? People in Nigeria were saying all sorts. So I said, you know what? I have to definitively, you know that habit of mine? I cannot just not know. I can't. I will not be all right. So I sat and I said, okay, I need to learn about this thing. Where can I go to learn it? That year, Dubai, I know you moved to Dubai, I was still based in Lagos. Dubai was positioning itself as the world capital of blockchain. And they were doing conferences on blockchain, Bitcoin. So I said, okay, I'm going to go to Dubai to attend any conference they have there on cryptocurrency. So I went online, I was searching, I found one, and I picked up my bags and I traveled. You know, that's when it was very easy to go to Dubai. It was so easy then, just go, you know. So I went, and the event was fantastic. I loved it. 2018, beautiful. But one of the best things you can get at these events is not just the sessions, but the networking. Some of the most knowledgeable people will just be in the audience. They're not speakers, nothing, but they will never write a book. But they are walking libraries, and you can only unlock it in conversation. So I met this young American who was in his 20s, multimillionaire, and he made his money in crypto. So we're just talking, and he was telling me all about, oh my goodness, everything he told me that day, how to start a cryptocurrency exchange, why his best customers were Chinese gamblers. You know, I was just listening and making all those notes. And when he was done downloading it into me, for free, he now said, so what about you? Where are you from? I said, I'm from Nigeria. Nigeria. You know that's the future, right? I said, well, people say that a lot, but I want to know why you are saying it. What do you mean by it? And he looked up, he said, well, because where we're coming from, back in Europe, we're not having any more babies. You get it? Oh my God, this guy dropped a bomb. That statement changed my mind. I knew then, that my help cometh not from the East or the West. It's here. Let me explain it. You know, if you study multinationals, what is one thing they are so aggressive about? Growth. If they make, say, $8 billion this year profit, and they make the same $8 billion profit next year, they are panicking. They are sacking people, downsizing. Why? We didn't grow. Now, so what happens when in your continent, Europe, nobody was born again? Birth rates are declining. And now you've sold to everybody who will possibly buy. And you need to grow to please the shareholders. Where do you look for growth? The place where they burn full ground. 7, 8, 9, 12. Can I break your heart a little bit? A little. When we say Africa rising, what is rising is not our creativity. I'm sorry, they lied. They were trying to make you feel good about nothing. Africa is the future. It's not the future of innovation. I'm sorry. Not the future of creativity. I'm sorry. The only thing rising about Africa is our population. They see Africa as a market to be milked. That's all. Okay. I told you every session of me is what? A critical thinking session, right? Why is the world not celebrating the rise of China? Us and China, who plenty pass? So why are they not celebrating, China rising, even though China is rising? Because the thing that is rising about China is a threat. Innovation in China is rising. Military spending is rising, right? But the thing that's an opportunity is our population. It is what is rising. So they are excited that these people contribute nothing. They just buy and buy and buy. We just have to push it in and they will buy. That's all we do. Don't feel sentimental about it. I will ask you one question. Between them that are finding ways to rush in here to sell to our population and you that was born here with home advantage, who should be better positioned to collect the money that is here? You. But you see, they are coming here because, see, the white man has, I don't like saying white man, but that's the only way I can communicate what I'm trying to say. All right? They have studied the brain, the psychology of human beings, and they have realized one thing, that all human beings are the same. We are all the same. Skin color and all that, yeah, but here, we are all the same. What does that mean? A Japanese man reacts the same way to discount as a Nigerian. An American man reacts the same way to superior customer service as a Nigerian. So they have these systems that work. The white man knows how to collect money from his fellow white man, and he knows it will work on the Nigerian. But the Nigerian hasn't learned how to collect money from his fellow Nigerian. You know how I know? Call the Nigerian business. Call. Hello? Who is it? You say what? You say we don't have. Call tomorrow. I say come tomorrow now. Like, are you joking? Call the white man's business. I mean the one where he hired a Nigerian like you and trained them to perfection. Call them. Hello, good afternoon. Funke speaking. How may I help you? How do you feel when you hear that? You want to keep talking, don't you? Oh, yes. They've mastered that. And so the Nigerian man has not learned to collect money from his fellow Nigerian in the way that the American man has mastered. They know market penetration. When they come, who are the influencers? Who do these kids, all these masses, who do they look up to? This one, that one, that one. Let's give them some millions. Let them wear our shirt. Brand ambassador. And everybody come, ah! They take the market. The Nigerian is still trying to struggle. All right? I want you to think as rainmakers. Rainmakers, they study. Study the cause of a thing. Why do people buy? Why do people get rich? Why does one person command more money than the other person? You have to study. And listen, there's a little bit of expo. I told you the rules of the modern world have been rewritten by the white man. Just go to the books that the white man wrote and read. Those books are spell books. Those are books of spells, so to speak. Read and open your eyes and see what it takes to make a human being prefer you over another person. Every problem is a knowledge problem. Understand things that the white man created and innovated and documented. The psychology of selling. There are some malls in Dubai, most of the malls in Dubai. There are no clocks. No windows. So you can't tell whether it's day or night. The principle behind that strategy is in their books. Read. There's a furniture store in Dubai in America called IKEA that is intentionally designed in a maze to make you get lost. So you spend more time inside there finding your way out. Google it. It's big, but designed in a way that you will get lost. And while you are finding your way out, you see something that you like. Oh, there are some stores, and Nigerians now do this one. they make their some malls, their shopping baskets are bigger than normal. You know why? So that when you buy, oh, you get it. I'm glad we are thinking together. Thank you. I like that, right? So that when you put a few items there, it feels so small compared to the basket, and your mind feels like you haven't done enough. And there is this, oh, Nigeria is such a classist society. There is pressure in this country. Pressure. So maybe when you came to just buy one malt, and somebody is beside you and has a full bar. Man of God, yeah, you're getting it. You just have to. They know. You see, they have premeditated the pressure you will feel there. They know you are the only one that's surprised about your own behavior. They've calculated it before you got there. The rules of the modern world have been rewritten, not by you, but that's okay. Those who rewrote the rules have documented their knowledge in books. I want you guys to be like the rainmakers, not the villagers, that when you see signs and wonders, you are jumping. Oh my God, this thing happened. Calm down. Go and study. Let me end with this. Me and a pastor friend of mine were having a conversation, a very deep conversation, about the man called Daniel. You know, in the Old Testament, after King Solomon, Daniel is one action figure that I admire. This guy was given to study, and he had insight. You know, when you have so much insight that the people there call you a babalawo. You know, that was the name. They called him the prince of, the chief of magicians. They didn't understand his level. You have to be a magician. It's magic. It has to be magic. So they called him the chief magician. Anyway, there was this part of Daniel that we all know where he prayed for something and the angel was held up for 21 days? Yes, thank you. For 21 days, all right? When the angel came, he said, Daniel, your prayer was answered from day one, but I was being held up by the prince of Persia. Me and my friend were talking. My friend dropped this thing. He said, wait, do you know that in that moment, Daniel was not really concerned that the angel was held up? He was listening. He was held up by the prince of who? Persia. If we are going by territories, that was the time of the Babylonian Empire. If you're going to be held up, who should be holding you? The prince of Babylon. But if you are being held up by the prince of Persia, could it be that a change of power is coming? Takeaway. Now, it's not written there, of course, but we are reasoning. Prince of Persia has no business in the Babylonian time. But what is written in heaven? It first happened. He said, it's coming. And he positioned. So when the kingdom was conquered by the Persians, he still maintained his relevance. Daniel served four different kings. And if you understand how warfare was done in those days, it's not voting, or there's no democracy. When the Persians said, Babylonians, your time is up. They are coming with a massive army. They kill everybody. Well, who's a threat? And they're looking at they conquered the king, removed him, probably killed him, or we don't know what they did with him. But they look at the wise men and look for who to retain. They prefer to kill everybody there just to be safe. Because we don't know, maybe you are loyal to the former man now and you might want to take vengeance on me. But they saw Daniel. Why did they retain him? We think he learned their language before they got there. Mene, mene, tekel upharsin. What was that? Probably written in Persian. I remember what it meant. It means your time is up. But it was written in the language of the new conquerors that people there could not understand. There was no Google in that time. Daniel was a rainmaker. So I'm going to encourage you. Tomorrow we'll have another power pack session. My time is fast spent. Rainmakers or villagers? Which one are you? Say to yourself, I am a rainmaker. One more time, I am a... God bless you. Thank you.
We hope that you've been richly blessed by this message. For inquiries or to listen to more of Reverend Edwin Bayebo's messages, kindly log into www.hotrenugu.org/mp3. That is www.hotrenugu.org/mp3 to listen and or to download. Truly, the word works.